Second Thought is a 100% viewer-funded operation. If you'd like to help support the channel and get some great perks while you're at it, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. On June 4th, 2024, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a landmark bill. After 9 months of the most widely broadcast genocide in history, the United States has officially chosen to proclaim that Israel is above the law. The bill, titled the Illegitimate Court Counteraction Act, aims to sanction the International Criminal Court for daring to seek justice in the case of the Israeli genocide of Palestine. For years now, legal observers and human rights groups have lambasted international law as little more than a tool for Western interests. And if there was any remaining doubt, this bill should put it to rest. And while the effort to shield a genocidal apartheid regime from legal consequences is horrific, it's at least sparked a conversation around one critical question. If the United States can flaunt international law, if it can wave off its own war crimes and those of its vassals, what good is international law? Okay, let's briefly cover the specifics of this new bill before we dive in. In May of this year, the lead prosecutor of the ICC officially applied for arrest warrants against Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, correctly accusing them of war crimes and crimes against humanity. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who's been paying attention. Almost all of Gaza has been leveled, medical personnel and journalists specifically targeted, children executed by Israeli snipers, the internationally banned white phosphorus deployed on schools and hospitals, and the entire population starved and forcibly relocated to supposed safe zones that were then targeted repeatedly by airstrikes. International legal experts have long said it's only a matter of time until some Israeli politician or another is called to account for the occupation's crimes against humanity. However, in an attempt to appear impartial, the ICC has also called for warrants against Hamas chief Yahya Sinwar and two other officials. Again, not a terribly surprising development, as the ICC knows going after Israel alone is a dead end, especially with the weight of the US behind them. Both Israeli and Palestinian officials have objected to the decision, Netanyahu going the usual children of light versus children of darkness route. Very normal, not fascist language at all, while the Palestinian resistance put out a statement that the court, quote, equates the victim with the executioner. While international legal observers have tended to agree with the Palestinian statement, drawing comparisons to slave revolts and the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, the United States, of course, has leapt to defend Israel. House Speaker Mike Johnson said of the ICC announcement, quote, "The U.S. firmly stands with Israel and refuses to allow international bureaucrats to baselessly issue arrest warrants to Israeli leadership for false crimes." I think we can all agree that U.S. politicians are notoriously dishonest, but it takes a particular kind of evil to call Israel's genocide false crimes. Anyone can go see the crimes for themselves. Just open Twitter or Telegram and type the word Palestine. You will see images that will haunt you forever. I know I bring this up every video, but we all need to be aware of what we're allowing to happen. So go look, please. These are real people. Joe Biden and his lackeys, of course, have doubled down on denying the genocide, which will become their legacy. At a speech in the Rose Garden, Biden said, quote, "Israel wants to do all it can to ensure civilian protection," and that, quote, "what's happening is not genocide. We reject that." Every bit of that is a lie. And the fact that any elected official can get away with saying this, let alone the president, let alone a president who's sending the weapons to facilitate the genocide, should show you what kind of regime we live under. And he's not the only one making these statements. A talking point that's been making the rounds, which means it's been pushed by the pro-Israel lobby, is the weaponization of the Holocaust. Here's an example. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said regarding the ICC ruling, quote, "It is shameful. Hamas is a brutal terrorist organization that carried out the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust." The New York Times independently printed the same rhetoric, saying, quote, "One of the greatest mass delusions of the 21st century is the belief that Israel is committing a genocide against Palestinians. This grotesque moral inversion, in which a genocidal terrorist organization that instigated a war with Israel by committing the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust." Then Republican Nikki Haley echoed similar sentiments, then took it a step further and wrote, "Finish them on the very shells the IDF will fire at civilians in Gaza." Republicans and Democrats are united in their denial of and complicity in this genocide. And so here we reach the crux of the matter. If the United States doesn't want something to happen, it will not happen. There will be no consequences for Israel, regardless of what the ICC determines. So let's talk a little bit about this relationship between international law and Western hegemonic power. The United Nations and the ICC claim to exist for the cause of justice. The UN was founded in 1945 with the primary goals of maintaining international peace and security, promoting human rights, and fostering social and economic development. Not doing great so far on that front. Its charter aimed to prevent the kind of catastrophic conflict that had devastated the world twice in less than half a century, or what the colonial powers got up to in Latin America, or what's happening now in Ukraine and Palestine. You see what I mean about that track record? The ICC, a product of the Rome Statute, wasn't established until 2002, and is the first permanent international court capable of prosecuting individuals for genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. The Rome Statute was adopted in 1998, and by July 1, 2002, it had come into force with the ratification of 60 countries. The ICC represented a significant step forward in the global quest for justice, providing a permanent judicial body to address the most egregious violations of international law. So, that's great, right? The world finally has a way to hold states to account for their war crimes. Well, to no one's surprise, the adoption of the Rome Statute and the establishment of the ICC were met with resistance from powerful nations, particularly the United States. You've probably heard of the American Service Members Protection Act of 2002, more commonly known as the Hague Invasion Act. This absurd piece of legislation authorizes the use of military force to free any US personnel detained by the ICC, which should show you how far the US is willing to go to protect their war criminals from accountability. This belligerent stance has continued to this day, as we're seeing now with the Biden regime's rhetoric surrounding the ICC's decision on the Israeli genocide. But this isn't the only instance of the US flatly rejecting to follow established international legal norms. Take, for example, the horrific US war crimes in Vietnam. The United States committed extensive atrocities during the war, including the My Lai Massacre, the widespread use of defoliants, and Operation Speedy Express. These are all obvious, despicable war crimes that have gone completely unpunished despite being clear violations of international law. The My Lai Massacre, perhaps the most infamous crime, was the wholesale slaughter of over 500 Vietnamese civilians, including women, children, and the elderly, by American soldiers. And this massacre was not an isolated incident, but rather part of a broader pattern of systemic violence and disregard for human life. The US military's use of defoliants like Agent Orange caused long-term environmental damage and severe health problems for millions of Vietnamese. To this day, birth defects and cancer rates are still incredibly high. The more conventional bombing campaigns, particularly Operation Rolling Thunder, resulted in massive civilian casualties and destruction of infrastructure. Operation Speedy Express, one of the deadliest single operations of the war, led to the deaths of at least 7,000 civilians under the guise of targeting North Vietnamese fighters. And this impunity enjoyed by the US extends beyond the Vietnam War into more recent military actions. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have similarly been marked by severe civilian casualties and war crimes. The use of drone strikes in countries like Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia has resulted in scores of civilian deaths, with little to no transparency or accountability. These actions, justified under the vague banner of counter-terrorism, have drawn fierce criticism from international human rights organizations. And yet the US remains completely unaccountable on the global stage. That's all pretty damning, but it would at least be less insidious if the ICC failed to prevent war crimes entirely. Instead, what we see is the selective application of international law. Since its inception, the ICC has predominantly focused on African leaders, with cases involving Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto, and Ugandan warlord Joseph Kony, among others. And while, yes, these prosecutions are important, the glaring absence of cases against Western leaders or their allies raises serious questions about the impartiality of the court, especially given the extent and severity of the war crimes committed by Western regimes. This isn't a coincidence. It reflects the political realities that shape international law, and is exemplified by a recent interaction between ICC prosecutor Karim Khan and a senior elected leader, where they said to Khan, "The International Criminal Court is built for Africa and thugs like Putin," clearly implying that there are whole groups of countries that shouldn't be subject to the scrutiny of the court. Speaking of Putin, would you like to venture a guess what the US's response was when the ICC did go after the Russian president? In a nutshell, it's justified. You're allowed to go after our geopolitical rivals, but going after an ally who's committing genocide is a bridge too far. Doesn't get much clearer than that. Because the US has Israel's back, their actions in Gaza and the West Bank will continue to escape international legal consequences, despite overwhelming evidence of genocide, human rights abuses, and severe violations of international law. The West's actions to block the ICC from pursuing justice in this case, while advocating for action when it benefits them geopolitically, has prompted the question, what good are these institutions if the US and its lackeys can flaunt international law at will? It should be obvious that the creation of these international legal bodies was more about maintaining a world order dominated by Western powers than it was about promoting global justice. The selective application of international law and the structural limitations of these bodies have made them little more than tools of neocolonial rule rather than impartial arbiters of justice. Okay, but why is the ICC so powerless? It's an international court. Doesn't it have some power to act on an international scale? Well, yes and no. The ICC does not have its own enforcement mechanisms, and its reliance on member states for arrests and evidence collection makes it vulnerable to non-compliance. The ICC relies on state cooperation to enforce its warrants and conduct investigations, which means nations like the US and its allies can simply refuse to cooperate. Best case scenario, it's like when the CIA gets to investigate itself. Obviously, they're not going to find evidence of wrongdoing, even though everyone on Earth knows exactly what they're up to. So when nations like the US claim jurisdiction over their own personnel and get to conduct their own investigations, what can we do? International investigations always result in little to no accountability. These investigations pretty much always lack transparency and independence, serving more as a means to placate international demands than to deliver justice. The Rome Statute itself, which again established the ICC, contains provisions that limit its reach. Article 98 prevents the ICC from requesting the surrender of a person from a state if it would require that state to act inconsistently with its international obligations. This provision has been used by the US to secure bilateral immunity agreements with several countries, ensuring that US nationals cannot be handed over to the ICC. But besides this tendency to allow criminals to investigate themselves, another of the primary reasons international courts fail to hold the US and its allies accountable is the significant political influence they wield. The permanent members of the UN Security Council, the US, UK, France, Russia, and China, hold veto power. Given that three of these countries are close allies, it allows them to block any actions that may threaten their interests. This veto power has been used repeatedly to shield nations from accountability. This was evident when the United States pressured other Security Council members to block any attempts to refer US actions in Afghanistan to the ICC. The very existence of the Security Council not only limits the court's effectiveness, but also undermines it. The ability of powerful nations to block referrals and influence investigations demonstrates that the ICC is a tool of political power rather than an impartial judicial body. This erodes trust in the ICC and discourages cooperation from other nations, further weakening its ability to enforce international law. And their influence extends far beyond the Security Council. Countries like the US leverage their economic and diplomatic power to sway other nations and international bodies with threats of sanctions, withdrawal of aid, or diplomatic isolation often used to dissuade countries from supporting actions that might hold the US or its allies accountable. Their manipulation of international politics ensures that the ICC and other international bodies cannot function impartially, or in some cases, function at all. So that brings us back to the present ICC case. Will Israeli leaders be brought to justice for their crimes against humanity? No, of course not. At least not by the ICC. The track record of actual justice being doled out against the Western powers or their vassal states is laughable. It's like that quote we saw earlier. Clearly, international law exists not to pursue genuine justice, but to add a veneer of legitimacy to Western-style law and order. Cracking down on geopolitical rivals and targeting leaders of states that, while they may be criminals, are only really being targeted because it serves Western interests. The US doesn't care about international law any more than it does genuine democracy. It's all about maintaining their dominance. The selective enforcement that results from this world order undermines the core principles of justice and equality that institutions like the UN and the ICC were supposedly founded upon. International law is just another tool in the imperialist toolbox. The fact that there is no legal avenue by which we can pursue justice in the case of the US's and Israel's war crimes shows just how pointless international law really is, at least as it currently exists. As long as the US and its allies continue to evade accountability, the promise of true justice will remain unfulfilled. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that this channel is entirely grassroots funded. Since sponsors don't want to touch videos like these, we have to rely on the generous support of viewers like you. If you'd like to help keep this channel afloat and get some great perks while you're at it, consider becoming a patron on Patreon. All patrons, regardless of pledge amount, get early access to every video, plus access to our patrons-only Discord server. We just made a major update to the Discord, with a revamped leveling system and monthly Discord Nitro giveaways to active members. We've also got a bunch of other cool stuff like a book club, live Q&As with me every month, and a dedicated educator role for users ready to answer any questions you have about socialism. We've built a thriving community, and we'd love for you to be part of it. So if you'd like to join the Discord, get early access to every video, and help support genuinely principled socialist content, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. If you enjoyed this video, leave us a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out our other content by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.